This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the 2v2 podcast.
Do you want to play a game? Computer, if it turns out alright, it turns out alright. If not, it doesn't. I mean, I got this, last week the digital release of Last Jedi came out.
Yeah, I was able to hear some of the podcast.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, it's your green milk container.
Yeah, my green milk container, man. My buddy, I 3D printed, like, this buddy, the bottom and this little cylinder thing. But, yeah, dude, he goes through, like, crazy detail. Like, he actually wanted, because I was joking around with him, and I said, so did you count the wraps of the cord around the handle there? And he's like, yes, I did. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Hey, man, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, man.
Isn't it though, man? Like, it's just one of those
that's
things.
That's like a cool little keepsake, man.
Yeah, exactly, like, man.
Like, I've still got my bag with the, I think you gave me like a celebration keychain, like a little lightsaber
hand. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. I still have that on there. That's got my Game Boy, the little Game Boy keychain thing that I bought from the video game museum.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's my bag of...
I thought you were going to say the little Game Boy that you bought the other day, the 3DS or whatever.
No, that thing is cool. I don't know if you've played with the new... So Nintendo's naming convention for those things suck.
Yeah.
Like, because you have the 3DS and you have the 2DS, and then they came out with updated versions of them. So the official name of the 3DS, the new one, is the new 3DS XL. And so the 2DS came
out. There's no confusion in there whatsoever.
Right? Yeah. So the new 2DS is the new 2DS XL, which there's actually like significant changes to those. They've added like a couple of analog. There's an analog stick on one side, and then there's a nipple on the other.
Oh, okay.
And then there's like a chipset that's different, so it runs like more detailed games.
Yeah.
But I've been having a blast with mine.
Yeah.
So
a heck of a lot more technological advance than the old Game Boy and stuff.
Yeah, but I've been playing old Game Boy games on it. So
there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, old Game Boy games are fun. I've never really personally had a Game Boy or any sort of portable like.
That would be system. A thing that I would recommend. Like, if you're wanting to get into old games and you don't like want the, if you don't have the space and you don't have the patience to like put the systems together, you can go find an old Game Boy, and you can find Game Boy stuff for pretty cheap and pretty available for everything.
Okay.
So I'm always like, I'm big into handhelds too. I don't have any like Sony or like the Sega Nomad or anything like that.
Yeah.
But all I have is like Nintendo stuff, but from the original Game Boy up until now the new 2DS XL.
Yeah.
And then the game that I bought was NES Remix, so it's like I think I might be stuck in a this is what I like
kind of. I always tell people, you buy what you like, man. If that's what you like, then buy it, man.
Yeah, I'm like, not, I don't begrudge anybody for.
Yeah, what was that? Dadgummit. I was gonna say, yeah, what is it? The handheld game is like the original cell phone, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't a phone, but that's what 90% of the people use their phones for, is for. Not necessarily just gaming, but everything, but it actually being a phone.
Yeah, I don't.
Your phone probably spends 10% of the time actually being a device to talk on, because now
not
it's
even
like
that,
a
man. You text,
instant messenger, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I'd still like. I don't know. I still talk on the phone. I'm not a big fan. I mean, I'm a fan of texting if it's just like a few things, but I don't want to hold a whole conversation just through text.
No, I won't.
It drives me up the wall.
I won't do that. I'll be like, look, I'll talk to you either later. Or we can talk on the phone.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to sit there and first of all, when I bought my iPhone 7, it came in a different language. Despite the fact that you set it up and you set it up in English.
Yeah.
So my keyboard is in a different language.
Do what?
Yeah. There's English letters there, but.
Yeah, but you're technically set up in like a different language, isn't like German or something.
Yeah,
like that,
and I can't, like, there's nothing I can do to get to break it.
Wow.
Like, I've reset the phone, I've reset the languages, I've done all of that, and it's in like French or something.
Really?
So when I type things out and it autocorrects to French.
Oh, so
so I have to like, so you like, I have to like go back and then type again. So like, I hate texting so you on my phone.
Type out crap and it like tries to change it to sacre bleu.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. It's like I didn't put these weird little marks on the thing. Right? Like,
yeah, what's going it's on got that? Umlauts and stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah,
I don't know what to do with this.
How do I get umlauts out of my, yeah, exactly. out of my typing?
Oh, man. No, hey, everybody. Welcome to 2BT, the bonus episode of 2BT. I'm David.
I'm Adam.
And you guessed we are doing the video game video. I really haven't thought of a clever title to call this yet.
But I don't know.
I don't know. But have you... I can't remember if we talked about the Atari VCS. Have you seen or read anything about that?
I've seen some things. So I knew it. So the VCS announcement was just made,
yeah.
But it was the Atari box for a couple of months.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is that no one really thinks this is going to see the light of day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I saw a thing, I was reading an article the other day that says that pre-orders open up next month.
Yeah, it's pre-orders for like crowdfunding.
Oh, okay.
So this thing's getting crowdfunded by supposedly Atari.
Yeah.
But Atari hasn't been Atari. It's like, I think it's part of some French company.
Yeah. Right now.
So it's not really. The thing with Atari is that it went out kind of like Sega, where Sega is also with a French company called SAMI.
Yeah.
So there you can officially license the Sega name. So Retrobit, a company I'd mentioned last time I was here that makes retro consoles, they are now making official Sega controllers.
Oh, okay.
But they essentially licensed the Sega brand, and so. So you can now go and buy like a Sega Genesis controller that's officially licensed, but it's produced by a completely different company, but it's under the Sega
name. Yeah, yeah.
And that happened with Atari as well. So there's a company that what are they called? At Games. They make these flashback consoles. So you've probably seen them where you have like an Atari console that's got 70 games in
for
$50 or $60 bucks. They're doing the same thing. They're going out and they found the company that owns the Atari name and they're licensing the name.
Okay.
And so I'm not convinced that the Atari VCS
is going to,
which was the original name of the 2600.
Yeah.
When it came out or before it came out, that was like the working name. I'm not convinced that that's just not some sort of side company who's like trying to get people to
just, yeah,
give to their Kickstarter or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, so there's a lot of, first of all, the thing is like way overpriced. It's like $300 or $400.
I was going to ask what exactly the price point on that was, because everything that I've read has not said like a price or anything like that or whatnot. It's just been like the Atari VCS. And I was going to say, I think I distinctly remember like the old school Atari box actually said Atari 2600 video computer system or whatever.
Yeah. So to pre-order one, I believe it's like $300 or $400.
Okay.
So they're really banking on people backing this up. The problem with all of this, and this has nothing to do with this particular company releasing the VCS.
Yeah.
There was another guy who did the same thing with Coleco.
Oh. And
this was a few maybe it'd been about a year ago.
Yeah.
He went out and bought the Coleco name, and building the same type of project, sort of like a Kickstarter, you know, well, you invest in us kind of thing. And he actually ended up buying the molds for the Atari Jaguar.
Oh, okay.
And he was calling it the Coleco Chameleon. And they were showing it off at conventions and stuff like that. And then that thing fell completely apart because it was supposed to play retro games.
Yeah.
And take cartridges and stuff like that. And he was there's a whole like modding community that there's with the, remember I was telling you about
the cherry pie
system on a chip kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a chip that came out that can do like a bunch of stuff. You can just like pre-program this thing to do it, but they haven't figured it out quite yet.
Yeah.
So he was telling everybody it's got this chip in it. It's going to be able to do all these games. You can put cartridges in it. So he starts taking this thing out and he's showing it off at conventions and the eagle eyes over at, and it was Atari Age that did this. They're like looking at it and they're like, that dude just took a Super Nintendo's guts and put it in a Jaguar shell. And so in one fell swoop, this dude has like demolished the names of Coleco and Atari and
oh, yeah.
Like just and nobody trusts these Kickstarters for these consoles. And so this group that's coming in and doing the Atari box or the VCS, they're running into that. They're going to run into that same problem because you have Nintendo Age and Atari Age. Atari Age is like the older dudes who know what everything is. They can look at a board and tell you, yeah, oh, that goes to this. This is where this chip goes. Like, they know that stuff inside and out. And this right now sounds like an emulation box with a Linux like operating system. Oh, that's okay. About it
too. Yeah.
So some people are really excited about it, but most of the retro community is like super skeptical about
it. Oh, really? I'm keeping my fingers crossed, man, because I'd heard like rumors that it was supposed to have the entire Atari library loaded on it or some crap like that or whatever. And I was like, dude, if that's the case, like, I mean, we're talking not just 2600, but like maybe, what was it? I can't remember the
5200 and the 7800. Yeah,
5200 and 7800.
Yeah, and there's also like Jaguar the ST and all that stuff. That's very possible that it could do that. But here's the flip side to that. Is that you can actually go get a retro buy and throw all those things on there. You can get a USB Atari controller.
Yeah.
And for, you know, less than $100, you can have that whole setup.
See, I like laying on my couch and playing video games. So this one comes with like wireless controllers. So
there's a solution.
Just saying. No, I'm just messing around.
But I don't know. Well, I'm keeping my eye on it. There's a guy that I watch that I'm semi-friends with on YouTube. He goes by the Atari Creep.
Yeah.
And that's what that's his system. Like, he just – Atari is his thing.
Yeah.
And so I keep an eye on him because he's the one who's like, as soon as something breaks, he's talking about it. So –
Yeah, see, my brother and I were actually kind of tossed around this idea, and actually, I can't take credit for it, it's all his idea, but you know how Nintendo keeps doing these, like, Nintendo Minis, the NES Mini, and the Super Nintendo Mini, or whatever, and basically, like, I think most people went crazy haywire over the Super Nintendo Mini because it came out with Star Fox 2 on it, which was never released and sought-after game or whatever.
Yeah.
Why is it, or why do you think that Nintendo won't just go ahead and just release a Nintendo, like you just a regular size Nintendo, maybe with all the games from the Nintendo on it, or, you know, say 80% of the library. But then you can sign into like you know, how PlayStation and Xbox both have their own online services where you can go on and buy more games or whatever and just download them to your box.
They do if you have a Switch.
Yeah.
So if you have the latest Nintendo console, or if you have a 2DS XL,
yeah,
new 2DS XL, they've got I forgot what it's called, whatever their market is for it.
Yeah,
the virtual console. Okay. So you can go and like I just got done playing Gargoyle's Quest, the Game Boy version that I bought from that store for $5.
Yeah.
The reason why they're not doing a full on console is because it's expensive.
Yeah.
Nintendo is very, very price conscious.
Yeah, they'll go ahead and spend the money on like making the minis. Crap, I just whacked the hell out of the microphone. I'm sure that came over.
It happens too.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, they'll spend the money to make the minis, to design the minis, and technically, really, they won't even have to design a box or anything like that, so there's no design cost. And you can take the guts out of whatever, just chunk it in there and be like, oh, well, here, look. You know, I mean, good God, if you had a terabyte hard drive on one of those things, then it would, you know, be more than enough to hold all that and then some, you know.
Yeah,
maybe play Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and Nintendo 64 or whatever.
The problem is that Nintendo, as much as I like Nintendo, you have to understand that they're very vicious on a business.
I kind of figured as much, yeah. They've been around for ages, so.
Yeah, they've been over, like, the company Nintendo has been around for, like, nearly 150 years.
Yeah.
And as far as the video game side of it is concerned, the reason why your NES never worked right, why it blinked, was because of a lockout chip. It really wasn't because the game was dirty.
Yeah.
Just like the pins hadn't lined up just perfectly. And so they had, back in the 80s, they had complete control over third-party games. So those third parties, when they would do, I'm leading into why they don't do this, but just to prove my point. But like, so if you played like Contra or Battletoads, or you're playing these games.
Yeah.
You have to understand that Nintendo was making money left and right. They're back and forth. So the company would make the game, and they'd want to publish it on Nintendo. They'd have to sign a contract with Nintendo, and then the company would have to buy all the parts from Nintendo in order to produce the games.
Yeah.
So the gray shell cartridges, the specific board, the NES 10 chip, all of that cost the company money just because they wanted to sell the game on Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
So Nintendo made money from the company, plus they made whatever residuals they'd make off to selling the game just normally, plus whatever else.
Oh, okay.
So they had like a tight control over that. When I say Nintendo is notoriously cheap, they are. They're extremely cheap when it comes to putting consoles out. So even though the Switch is this kind of new revolutionary console, you can take it home, you can take it on the go, you can do all this stuff, it's essentially a Wii U.
Yeah.
With these other capabilities. It's not very advanced. If you compare that to an Xbox One or PS4, you're not even going to get close to the same clock times, graphics capabilities, or anything like that. So Nintendo concentrates on creating particular games for their systems that will appeal to people, and they usually have a gimmick with it.
Yeah.
And so that actually started with the GameCube, but you're looking at Wii and Wii U and the Switch.
Yeah.
So when it comes to these retro consoles, one of the things that Nintendo does is they create a false sense of limit availability.
Yeah.
So the NES Classic, nobody can get their hands on it because a bunch of scalpers have bought them and they're trying to flip them for like $500.
Yeah. Same thing that they're doing with the Nintendo, Super Nintendo.
Yeah, whatever. The Super Nintendo one, they've actually produce more of, and you can, if you go to the right store, you got to do a little bit of looking, but you know, for $80, you can go pick up a NES Mini or SNES Mini. but Nintendo is really big on creating this false availability kind of thing because they could just go out and produce more NES Classics.
Oh, yeah.
The chip that's in, there's like one difference in the chip from the SNES to the NES Minis. And it's probably because the chip in the NES Mini isn't made anymore because it was already old
out of date whenever it came out.
So they could just replace that chip with the one for the SNES and still have the availability of that, but they don't do it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's other licensing things that go on because there's certain games that you just wouldn't be able to get now. Like you can't get the Batman video game from the 1989 Batman movie.
Oh, okay. Like
there's licensing issues with Warner Brothers. Sunsoft technically isn't around anymore. It was bought up by Konami.
Yeah.
Getting a hold of that game in order to release it would be pretty much impossible.
Okay. Yeah, so just regular, like, red tape BS, basically.
Yeah, there's a bunch of red tape. Nintendo's cheap, and Nintendo wants the fan base to stay rabid, so they provide very limited availability for these things. And that's not a knock on Nintendo. That's just the way they operate. And if you have an understanding of that, you can kind of be okay.
Well, it makes people rabid for their product, man.
It does.
It's kind of like where their new consoles come out. You know, just about any new console, it seems like they do a limited release. Oh, well, this store's only getting 15, and this store's only getting 20, and this store's getting 50. So, you know, hopefully you pick the right store to go camp out in front of before the new Nintendo console came out.
Yeah.
So that way you get the new console.
Well, there's that, and then with these minis, you're really biting into our generation.
Yeah.
With the, oh, yeah, I used to play this game. I really like it.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's the main
drive. And I want to show my kids.
Yeah, that's the main drive of that. I mean, you can't tell me that. I mean, granted, we all enjoy these games because we had fun playing them back in the day, but you can't tell me that there's a huge, you know, drive in kids to want to play these games. There's not.
No,
it's basically just pointed at people our generation and maybe a generation below us trying to go like, here, give us more of your money. Here's basically the games that you played as a kid to give you that feel good feeling of sitting in your floor as a kid playing on your Nintendo.
That might be true, but I'm not totally convinced of that. The reason is because when you look at sort of the indie market for video games,
yeah,
it's all like the predominant amount of it is retro stuff. So like, what was the game? Cuphead. Cuphead just came out. First of all, Cuphead's awesome if you haven't played it. If you loved Contra,
yeah,
and you're like, I need to put my nuts in a vise with a hard game, Cuphead's awesome. But
does the Contra cheat code work for it?
No. No, Cuphead is What's great about it is you can have like a totally crap computer and work on it.
Oh, awesome. Like
it, but it runs on that nostalgia of this is what Contra was like.
Yeah.
When it really wasn't. It's actually harder than Contra, but it runs on that nostalgia thing, and it's one of the top selling games. Shovel Knight was another one. That one actually goes into 8-bit pixel style and chiptune music. So a lot of the indie games that are coming out on Steam and on the PSN network and whatever Xbox has, they're going back to those retro games where it's just like simple 2-button controls.
Yeah.
And a directional pad.
Okay.
And so like I think there is like this, there's a blend from people our age who are just like, yeah, I used to sit on the floor and play Nintendo.
Yeah. So
it was amazing.
Oh yeah. I spent many an hours doing it. It was, you know.
It's, and then there's this other version of it where it's like, okay, well, here's an 8-bit game, and we, like, generically made it hard. Just for being hard. Like, Super Meat Boy is another game that's, like, 8-bit graphics, just difficult to be difficult, but that's because, oh, yeah, that's how video games used to be when my parents played video games. So I think that there is this, not only a nostalgia trip, and we'll get into this because we're supposed to be talking about Ready Player One.
We're going
to
jump into that like right now.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go off on.
No. It's fine. I kind of drew us off track. Anyways, it's kind of like the signpost of 2BT is to basically get off track as many times as what we possibly can. It's never on purpose, but it's just kind of like happens.
Can I shove in one bit of retro news?
Yeah. Go okay. Right ahead.
So again, we've been talking about these retro consoles. You're like, why don't they just release a console with, like, games? You could download it. It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But the other option is what Sega is doing. So if you have a PlayStation 4, if you have an Xbox One, or even if you have a computer, you're not going to get this because you probably already emulate.
Yeah.
But Sega announced their... Sorry, my... I'm getting old. The print is too small.
Need some readers along with your regular
glasses. I do. I'm like, I need my bifocals.
Right.
The Sega Genesis Classic Collection is coming out in May 29th. If you're in the UK or European area, it's the Sega Mega Drive Collection. And this thing's going to have 57 games on it.
Oh, wow.
The games list got released just like yesterday.
So this is basically like the NES Mini type thing, I guess, or whatever?
Well, it's going to be a collection of a bunch of Sega Genesis games all on one disc.
Oh, okay.
And it sells for around 30 bucks.
Yeah.
So it's a budget title.
You'll be able to play that on PS4 yeah, or so 360.
Okay. I have a quick list. I wasn't going to go through all 57 games.
Yeah, no, that's too much.
But some of the games that are showing up are really good and ones that I'm trying to find that I can't even get a hold of. So the first game that I'm going to recommend is Toe Jam and Earl.
Toe Jam and Earl?
Yeah. I don't know if you remember that game.
Nah, I never played any Sega. I was on Nintendo, man.
So if you've never played Nintendo, get this thing. Because because I have the Xbox 360 collection that they did, and then I also have a PS2 collection that they did, and if it's any of the quality that those are, then you're going to have, this is going to be an awesome time.
Yeah.
But Toe Jam and Earl is, it's sort of set at like sort of a 45 degree angle, and you play as either Toe Jammer or Earl. That's hard to say.
Yeah, no kidding.
And if you get a second player, the other person can play, you play simultaneously. And then, basically you have to kind of scavenge around for stuff. It's a hunt and peck kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if you're trying to get Earthlings off your planet or if you're just trying to get to the next level, but you have a set of list of things that you have to collect. The thing that's cool about the game is that each level is randomly generated.
Okay.
So you're never going to play the same game twice. And then with the 2-player game, and the music's awesome too. It's like cool funk music.
Yeah.
And because their planet is called Funkatron. So if the characters split off screen, the screen splits.
Yeah.
And so you can have two people going off in two different directions and collecting things on their own and then meeting back up.
Oh, okay.
So for when you think back to a 16-bit game, this is pretty advanced.
Oh, yeah.
For what it was doing. The next game is, I'm not big into RPGs, but I absolutely love this game. It's called Shining Force. Something that not a lot of people talked about, but if you liked the Final Fantasy games, this is a tactical RPG. So there's a grid system. Depending on where you place your characters,
yeah,
you get perks in your attack. Also, depending on the land that you're on. So you have all these different characters. You have different races. So you have, like, humans, but you have, like, Pegasus people and, you know, half horse, half human. And if you're, like, on a mountain range and you're playing with this half horse, half human, you get, like, a 15% increase in your attack because that's their native area or whatever that they're used to playing it or being in. So they have the advantage in the attack. But it's like Final Fantasy. You build up a team and you start building up this army, the Shining Force.
Yeah.
And eventually your army gets so big that you can't take everyone with you. So depending on where the towns that you're going to, there's like a barracks that you can go and swap out characters. But cool. Then you have like all your typical RPG stuff. So weapon repair, weapon purchases, armor upgrades, all yeah. of the stuff with each character. And it sounds like it'd probably be like super confusing, but the menu's like a yes and no quick switch menu.
Oh, okay.
So it's like super easy to get into, and after about two battles, you'll be like, oh, this game's awesome.
Sounds cool.
I got three more games. I'll get through them really quick. Phantasy Star 2. Again, I'm not a big RPG guy, but yeah. my favorite RPGs are Sega RPGs. So, if you like Final Fantasy, Phantasy Star 2 is amazing. It's huge. Instead of having like a big overworld, you have three different planets that you have to go to.
Oh, wow.
And I've never made it to the second planet. I've always gotten stuck on the first planet, but it's awesome. The next game is Ristar, which is one of my personal favorites. It's done by the same team that did Sega, or that did Sonic. So this was originally what Sonic was going to be. So Ristar is a star that grabs a hold of enemies and then headbutts them into, like, oblivion.
That sounds like an 80s game.
It's amazing. And
you get the star, you see, and it's gonna headbutt it into oblivion, you see? Yeah, it'll be great.
And the original design for Ristar was that he was gonna be a rabbit, and he would take his ears and he would headbutt people.
Oh,
and then that eventually evolved into Sonic, and they got rid of the headbutting mechanic and made him just a fast hedgehog. Which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the final one that I have on the list, and this was also one that's not showed up in any other collection, is a game called Gunstar Heroes, which wasn't produced by Sega. It was produced by a company called Treasure. And Treasure was a bunch of Konami guys that were just mad.
Yeah.
And they left Konami. They're like, look, we're going to make your games, but better. So Gunstar Heroes is essentially Contra, but with a bunch of added stuff. And so it never made it onto any one of these collections. This is a game that's going for like $80 right now anyway.
Okay.
So
yeah, so it's one that you can.
So if you can get it for $30 along with, you know, 56 other games,
yeah, then you're totally making out pretty well then.
Definitely, but yeah, that was my quick news. So the Sega Genesis, what is it? The Sega Genesis Classics Collection will be coming out May 29th. So if you're like, I don't have the room for video games. And you already have an Xbox or a PS4, then...
Then there you go. All you got to do is buy the one.
Buy the one, and you're going to be happy. And if you've never experienced Sega, this is already like a pretty decent curated collection to get.
Heck yeah, man. That's pretty awesome. I have one thing to add from the show that we did the last time.
Okay.
I was trying to remember the name of an Atari game that had little...
Oh, with pad. The controller. Yeah, I remember the touch, the keypad.
Star Raiders.
Okay.
Yes. Thanks Steven for that. He heard the show and he was like, dude, how did you forget the name of that game? I was like, dude, I was young.
Yeah. And we're recording at usually around my punch out time.
Yeah.
Like this is after my lunch normally at work. So I'm like, by this time I'm just like, oh, I don't remember what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand.
Oh, but mama told me that I could go home early.
Mama made my costume.
Oh my goodness. Anywho.
Drumming up some old
I
stuff.
I know, right?
It is fun to do, though.
So let's move on to Ready Player One.
Yes. I probably over-noted.
That's all right. I didn't note at all, so you're going to be carrying the team with that one.
Okay. So with all this talk about retro games, this is another reason for me why I think retro games is going – in a direction that's more than just appealing to you and me.
Yeah.
Or our age of people, because Ready Player One's about to hit. We've already had movies like Guardians of the Galaxy come out, and there was a giant Pac-Man reference in the movie. People know that. And Ready Player One uses a lot of not only video game nostalgia, but like a lot of the movies that are coming out that have been out. Steven Spielberg movies.
Oh, yeah.
But, or at least movies produced by Steven Spielberg that are referenced in this movie. And so we're going to go over... I made a list of things that I would like to see transfer from the book to the screen. Some of the stuff I know that's going to happen because it showed up in the previews. But we've had our tickets for about a month now.
I have not bought tickets yet. I'd still like and stupid because if it was a Star Wars movie, I would have had tickets probably now for about 3 months. But I just haven't gone out and bought them yet. I need to. I want to. I just gotta do it.
I think my wife loves the treatment of like. Being the first person in the room kind of thing. Because we had Ready Player One tickets like for a month already. And we already have Avengers Infinity War tickets.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, that doesn't even come out until April.
Yeah.
So we already, like, she gets on as soon as she gets a tweet from, like, Fandango or whatever. She's like, do you want to go to this? I'm like, yeah, okay, we got tickets. Like, all right.
You're like, good work.
And she knows I'm a bit of a audio snob, so I have to sit like as close to dead center in the theater as possible.
Yeah.
So I can hear everything where it's supposed to be at.
Oh, yeah.
So we usually get like really good seats like months before anybody else buys their tickets because she's nuts about it.
Yeah. Plus, it's also the sweet spot to set for the picture usually, too.
Because yeah, it is. It's the picture's like a big deal, but if you can sit...
Oh yeah,
I always try to sit in the middle so I can hear all the surround sounds.
Oh god, yeah.
But we'll get into Ready Player One. I made, like I said, I overnoted for this thing, baby.
You know.
So I've got a list of the characters in the setting. Just wanted to set that up for anybody who's not familiar with it or wondering why are all these geeks like going nuts about this thing? Like I haven't heard anything about it or I don't know anything about it. Because you've read the book, I've read the book.
Oh, God, yeah. I've read the book multiple times. So, well, I've done the audiobook. I haven't technically read it. I've listened to it, but it's basically the same thing.
I've listened to the audiobook and I've read it, but it's been so long that my memory's a little shaky on it. So, I'll say something and then you may be like, that's not technically what happened. That's fine. You can do that. But I thought I would start off with sort of the characters and the settings.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll get started with the characters. So James Halliday, and in my notes I put it, he's sort of like a Willy Wonka / Steve Jobs.
That's exactly what I always kind of pictured him as. Also, is like is more of a Steve Jobs, but as you know, Willy Wonka, whatever you want to call him as well. You know, he seemed very much a Steve Jobs in the book when I read through it,
and that's the way I picture him. Like, and I'm not talking about like. A really big jerk Steve Jobs. We're talking more like really weird and aloof Willy Wonka type Steve Jobs, where he's created the Oasis along with Ogden Morrow, and we'll get to him in a second. But Ogden Morrow's kind of the Steve Wozniak.
That was, yeah.
Of the character.
That's kind of what I always did him as, also even kind of pictured him as Steve Wozniak.
So did I. Yeah. And so when I was like, Simon Pegg's playing... playing Og, and I'm like,
you need
sort of like a balding, fat, bearded
guy. Yeah,
cherub type looking dude.
Yeah,
who's just like, hey, well, come on in, man.
Who looks like he's comfortable smiling all the time.
Yeah, and that's the way. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who just pictured.
I totally pictured him as Steve Wozniak the entire time. Every time I've read through the book, and then whenever I heard that, you know, Simon Pegg was playing him, I was like, okay, I can kind of see it because Simon Pegg kind of has that kind of personality, it seems like, to him.
He could. And I mean, and we don't know what he's going to look like in the movie.
Yeah.
So the virtual reality version of him could be a Wozniak-esque kind of character.
Yeah.
But that really wouldn't fall in line with sort of the other things that happen in the book, where most people try to look better than themselves in the Oasis. And I'm going to try hard not to spoil anything, which is difficult to do. But
and to me, the movies, the creators, is one of the things that has disappointed me. And I'm not spoiling a blasted thing by saying this, but like you, because you can go online and you can see that it gives H the mystery of H away or whatever.
Yeah, it does.
That kind of really bothered me.
And
I was like,
I don't know if it's because we've read the book. Yeah. We know who H is. I'm sort of with you. That should have been
left for a surprise, like the big reveal.
That, almost, yeah, I agree. Cause that was the big reveal in the book.
Oh yeah.
But
then I'm not going to say what it is just because, you know, I want people to read the book. Cause to me, like a lot of people go out and just watch the movie and they'd be like, oh, well, that movie was great. Now I'll read the book. You know, then again, a lot of people never get around to reading the book. And I really want you to read the book cause it's one that I suggest firmly all the blasted times.
Yeah, because so. I know you guys are doing sponsorships with Audible.
Audible.
So that's a book you definitely need to, if you haven't gotten the Audible thing, you need to go get it and go get Ready Player One.
NerdyLegion.com/ audible.com/NerdyLegion, something like that. Just go to the Nerdy Legion website, click the banner, it'll take you in there. Sign up for your 2 weeks free, get your two free books. It's the largest, the world's biggest online library.
I like how I opened you up to the
it's a great segue, man. Yeah.
I just narrated by Shut Up Wesley.
Yeah. Will Wheaton.
Yeah. And so I'll jump to the next character here. Parzival, he's our main hero. I'm only going by their online names because that's mostly what they use in the book.
That is, yeah, exactly.
His name's Wade Watts.
Wade Watts, yeah. And in fact, I think they might only call him Wade Watts like 5 or 6 times in the actual book.
Yeah, he's referred to as Parzival most of the book.
Yeah.
It's Parzival, not Parsifal.
Yeah.
Z. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. So he's our main character. He's our protagonist in the story. He's our Charlie Bucket.
Yeah, exactly.
He's very much a Charlie Bucket. When you hear a lot of people reference back to Willy Wonka, there's a lot of reference back to it, the way these characters are set up. So he's poor. He lives in the stacks, which I'm really excited to see.
I am too, man. The only disappointment that I have is that whenever I've seen the trailer, it already mentions that he's in Columbus, Ohio, instead of in Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma, yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, honestly, like that kind of probably would have taken away from the movie a little bit to have it in his trip to Columbus because you don't really see anything. It just says that he gets on a bus and he goes. The next thing you know, he's in Columbus. So
yeah,
but.
That's what I have for him. He's just the main character. He's poor.
Yeah.
We'll try to talk about this a little bit later on about how the poor system works in the setting here. So next is H. And
who is Parzival's best friend?
Best friend and sort of competitor.
Yes.
They are very competitive with each other, but they razz each other. They're good buds.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about that. But, they're Gunters.
Yes.
This was the note that I made in here. Gunter is a
term.
It's a really bad term, but
yeah, it's a combination of
egg and hunter.
Yeah.
So the theme throughout the book and what's probably going to be in the movie is that James Halliday, he dies. And as soon as he croaks, there's like a YouTube video that comes on for everybody to watch. And it's basically him saying, well, I'm dead. And I'm going to leave the Oasis for someone to take over.
Yeah, here's the key to the kingdom, basically.
Yeah, and to do this, you have to go find Easter eggs. So the people who are out hunting these Easter eggs, these egg hunters, are called Gunters.
Yeah.
Not a good name.
No. But it works, though.
It does make sense in context.
Totally seems like something that mainstream media would call somebody that did that, and so that's kind of like that's one of the it's
a celebrity like celebrity crush name,
exactly.
Like,
yeah,
Bennifer, like, or
yeah, you know. or Dussel. That's another old stuff.
We're gonna throw out a bunch of references
I know,
people
right?
don't know
yeah.
anything to. All right, next I have up on the list is Artemis. Artemis is the love interest,
yes,
and that's the only. She's very smart, very capable. strong woman.
Yes.
You know, but she is the love interest of our main protagonist. And that's more or less what her role kind of is, but she is also very competitive. So she is also a Gunter.
Yes.
Next I have up is Ogden Morrow. We kind of already talked about him. He is the Steve Wozniak.
Exactly.
Now I can't remember if this accurately or not. He only goes into the Oasis like once a year for his birthday or something like that.
Basically,
right?
Like, well, yes and no. I won't say any more than that because I don't want to spoil anything. Because apparently, like,
he's there and not.
Yeah, he's there and not. Like, he doesn't really go into the Oasis a whole heck of a lot, but he is always observing, let's put it that way. He's almost like omnipresent, like a god
inside the Oasis. He's the watcher of that. He's since, at this point in time in the book, he's retired.
He does do interviews.
He does do interviews. He may work on educational software for the Oasis. That's pretty much what he has done. But he's made his money. He's rich. He's pretty much got all his needs met. That's where he's at. And then the last character that I have is Nolan Sorrento.
Oh, and I love the casting that they did for Nolan Sorrento.
It's good casting. Nolan Sorrento was named after Nolan Bushnell.
Okay.
Of the founder of Atari.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So just a little added spike in there.
Yeah.
But he's the corporate baddie. I got the name of the company.
I can't think of the actor's name that's playing him. It's the bad guy from Rogue One.
Yeah.
I can't think of his blast name. What's the actor's name?
I don't remember his name either. That's why I took notes for this.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm like, don't put me on the spot. I don't know. anyway, he is part of a corporate group, and they are, what are they called? Innovative?
IOI. Innovative IOI. Online Industries.
There you go. He's not like the head of it, but he's ahead of the
oology.
Yeah, he's ahead of a division. And that division right now is concentrated on searching for these Easter eggs. Essentially, if you think of IOI, think of them like EA, trying to put like loot boxes and DLC and day one patches.
Ben Mendelsohn. Dude, that was driving me nuts. Dude, I had to go to IMDb. Ben Mendelsohn. You know how, okay, so they call his department that he's over oology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how they got the oology term, right?
No. This is something that I'm blanking out on.
Okay, so ornithology is a study of birds. So the oologists and the oology, his department that he's over is basically the O is for ornithology or the study of birds. Birds lay eggs, egg hunters.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a stretch.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. I was sitting there one day listening to the book at work, and I heard somebody say something about ornithology, the study of birds, and then that's or I can't remember what bird watchers, like their technical term is called. But anyways,
like butterfly people are like, what is it, philodopterist or something like that? Like some really like. Yeah, there's some sort of Latin root, whatever.
Yeah, that stuff. So anyways, that's how the term oology came.
Okay, well that makes sense. That's a very, like, you got to piece that out.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But let's get into the setting a little bit. So it's 2044, I believe. The world is kind of crap at this point in time. So we've got global warming.
It's almost post-apocalyptic without the apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the world's gone to crap through pollution and global warming. And
fossil fuels are depleted. Yeah, there's a lot of overpopulation. That's a big, at least to me, that was my big takeaway from the book, was that there's overpopulation. And so there's a lot of poor people. And for people who've never lived in a trailer park, I've spent most of my youth in a trailer park. So it's where a lot of poor people go.
Yeah.
But you can buy a house and it's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with a trailer park.
Yeah.
But in this future, they've, since there's not places to put people, and trailer parks are relatively small places already. You even if you live in one, most of the time you can see the other end of the park.
Yeah.
It's not very big. So what they've started doing is, you know, people can afford mobile homes, but there's no space to put them on. So what they started doing is building scaffolding on top of other mobile homes and started building these up, like...
Stacking them up.
And that's where the stacks come from.
Yeah.
And, but these are kind of haphazard, jerry-rigged, like, just trying to get them to stay up.
Oh, yeah.
And so... if you can imagine building like scaffolding to hold something that weighs a couple tons and then stacking that up again and again and again until you've got like a multi-story building, these are the stacks.
Yeah.
And this is where Parzival lives and comes from.
And part of the dangers of living in the stacks is that they're not always engineered the best. They're kind of redneck engineering. You know, yeah. Some southern engineering, whatever you want to call it, to where it's like, it's basically put up there, it's set up there. And a lot of times you have scaffoldings fall, which takes out multiple stacks. So that's one of the dangers of living in the stacks is high winds and things like that. So
actually, that's the first thing on my list that I want to see from the movie.
The explosion?
Not the explosion.
Oh, okay.
I just want to see, a set of stacks fail.
Yeah.
And I don't like, we know that we're going to see something like that in the movie, but I want to see just
the domino
normal
effect.
Yeah, I want to see a normal case because you have to keep in mind that you've got these stacks, there's families living in them. Some of them are multifamily mobile homes.
Yeah.
These are poor people. These are people who have a lot of money. So you're talking about multiple deaths when, a 50-story stack falls.
Yeah.
It's, and that's probably really morbid, but that's kind of what that kind of gets that gritty reality of here's where the world is at.
Oh yeah. And I think it's like, Parzival says in his home alone, there's what, like three different families, I think, living in the one trailer or whatever. I think that's what it was.
I don't remember that, but, and like I said, my mind's a little shoddy on the remembering details. I know he lived with his aunt.
Oh,
and she didn't like him.
Yeah, his aunt and her boyfriend, and then I think another family. So I think it's just the two families in there. So
maybe, but most of these mobile homes have multiple families in them.
Yes,
and so that's kind of where we are in reality. The other thing to keep in mind is that pretty much everybody uses the Oasis. One of the crises that happens is that, like, the U.S. dollar, and I'm sure other physical monies, is pretty much crap.
Yeah.
So everybody's on a Bitcoin type of thing. And of course, the Bitcoin for this is going to be from the Oasis.
Yeah, the Oasis.
So everything that you do, you can do stuff within the Oasis to earn money. And that's what most people do is that they, you know, their jobs or their school or whatever it is they're doing, a lot of them are doing that in the Oasis and to earn money that's not only just money in the Oasis itself, but real money for them to buy food and...
Oh, yeah. Like, a lot of people go to work inside the Oasis. They have their storefront. If they own a store or whatever, their storefront is actually inside the Oasis. Everything is mainly done online or inside the Oasis, whatever you want to call it, at this point in time in the United States and just all over the world, really.
And that was my number three on my list, is that I want to see the working Oasis. I want to see Oasis as your drab. I think I'm just like a negative dude.
Yeah.
But like, you hate going to work. You hate getting your car, having to drive to work. You spend all day there. I mean, I hate my job, but whatever. Some people really like their job. That's cool. If you love your job, that's awesome. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, you're one of the very few that do actually love their job.
But just the drudgery. I want to see the drudgery of the Oasis, going in and going to work, having to spend 8 hours working a shop or doing some sort of menial task that you have to do to earn money.
Yeah.
I want to see the working Oasis. We're going to see from the previews, we've got a lot of the gaming Oasis, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to see the drudgery. I just want to see, like, okay, if you had to live in this virtual world and work in it, I want to see what that means.
Yeah.
And from the book, we do get a side of that.
Yeah, because Parzival works at a help desk for the Oasis or whatever.
Yeah, and someone who does tech support, I can completely sympathize with that character. But yeah, that made number three on my list as far as what I want to see. I feel like we're leaving out something big. The Oasis is made up of worlds. That's also what I wanted to talk about. So in the Oasis, you have
the zones.
Yeah, you have different zones, which are essentially like in the book, they more represent them as planets.
I kind of got it as zones, but then you had planets inside those zones because you'd have whole areas that were nothing but like, you know, like the school world. Yeah. Well, then you had the school world, but then you had the zones that's like the no science or the no technology zones or whatever. So if you flew into that zone, then your starship would crap out and you'd have to get a wizard with like a giant space slug to tow you across the zone or whatever. That's
right. I forgot about that. So this may be a little hard to sit down and really explain.
Yeah.
But what I'll say, and because you're right about the zones, I forgot about that part, is that there are particular planets. And so where Parzival is spending most of his time is on the school planet.
Yeah.
To transfer from one planet to another costs money. And so you have to earn experience points or something.
Credits.
Yeah, you have to earn credits. And I don't know how you earn credits from just being on the school planet.
You can't earn credits on the school planet because that was the reason why he was always stuck there. The only way that he could get off is by being transported by one of his friends to another world. And then he would usually earn enough credits to transport back to...
That's right.
I can't remember the name of the school, like Luna or something like that.
Yeah.
Not Luna. Luna's a... Anyways, it doesn't matter what it meant. Yeah,
but yeah, there's planets. There's planets that are dedicated towards one thing.
Yeah.
So Parzival at the beginning of our story, he's poor, doesn't have the credits. He's going to school. He's hitting up the library. Pretty much that's his thing. So he's really studying up on Halliday, which is something that's kind of his personal passion anyway. Before the contest starts. So he's, you know, listening to Rush. He's studying up. Halliday's pretty much our age.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be like, I did the math one time. I think it was like he was born in 71 or 72.
Yeah, he's a little bit older. He's several years older than us.
Yeah.
But we're along the same track line.
Exactly, same generation, basically.
And but with the Oasis, I think if I remember correctly, you had to apply to be able to go to school in the Oasis. Otherwise, you had to go to a physical school.
Yeah, you had to get approved or whatever.
And then you get approved and they give you a suit. So, of course, it's virtual reality. You got to have a suit. You get like haptic feedback gloves. You get a visor. And, you know, you get the government issued stuff, which is pretty much like government issued anything else. It's not very good.
Except for the cheese. The cheese was pretty awesome.
Yeah, the cheese is awesome. Peanut butter's not too bad either.
Yeah.
But
you had to stir that peanut butter up.
Yeah, you got to get the oils back in the peanut butter. but yeah, so yeah, he's on your basic general issue haptic suit.
He's on the government cheese haptic suit with it works.
It works. I mean, I think some of it's
top of the line.
No, I think some of it's being held together with duct tape and spit.
Yeah, the console is basic. The goggles are basic. The gloves are basic. He doesn't really get the suit until he like gets one himself because they figure that all you need are the gloves, the goggles, and the actual console to run it.
Yeah.
So before, that's what he has to start off with, and it's in his little hideout or whatever his. And that's one thing that I'm actually kind of excited about seeing how they do his little hideout.
There's a lot of detail in the book. There's a ton of detail.
Yeah.
About the hideout
itself.
And the way I'm going to compare the Oasis is sort of like smartphones for everybody. So if you could imagine the government giving you the Obama phone.
Right.
And there's some people who have the latest iPhone.
Yeah.
Somebody's got an iPhone X or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And it does all this neat stuff and it takes cameras with depth perception and all this facial recognition. Yeah. All this stuff. That's kind of how the Oasis is. The Oasis was just, it started off as a video game thing and then it blew up and became other things. So this also goes back to that Steve Jobs analogy where everybody's got a smartphone.
Yeah.
Even if you don't own an iPhone, you have a smartphone. And that was really, you got to give Apple credit for that, for making
the
smartphone something that everybody wants. So that's kind of how haptic suits are. That's kind of how the Oasis is as well, is that everybody has access to the Oasis. Some people don't have as good of methods of getting there than what other people do. Some people have the top of the line suits. So we're looking at Parzival with his government cheese suit.
With his government cheese suit.
I like that.
Yeah, that's about the best description you can get for it, I think.
But yeah, that's kind of our setting. I don't know if we did a good job telling that or not, but
yeah, it's, to me it works.
The environment of the Oasis, you have to understand that it's almost based on imagination.
Yeah, it's going to be everything that you want it to be, basically. Like, you go to Blade Runner world or whatever. Yeah. They even have, there's one world that he goes to arcade, like Hall of Fame type thing.
Yeah, and it's got all the different arcades from.
Yeah, and it's basically just a world. It's actually a world that he goes to that's nothing but video games or whatever. Yeah,
so. Arcade machines and arcade layouts.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's the entire world. But yeah. You're right, I forgot about the zones too. So you also have zones.
Yeah. The best way to, like, and I'm hoping that they show some sort of a map, because the way I always kind of envision it in my head is, like, if you have, like, a piece of graph paper, but the graph, you know, it might not be as many squares, but each one of those squares has many worlds inside of it. So that gives you an idea how vast the expanse of the Oasis is. And then you have transports that can transport you between the worlds or between the zones or whatnot. And
now I can't remember. There's teleports, but there's also transports.
Yeah, you can also take teleport will take you directly to the planet. But if you're taking your own ship, then you have those gates that you can fly through that will transport not just you, but your entire ship as well. And they say that those are 10 times more expensive than just like the teleports or whatever.
Okay. Which will take me to my number two. I'm going way out of order, but that's fine. The mounts.
Oh, yeah.
So this is something that I really want to see. And obviously from the trailer, not giving any spoilers, he has a DeLorean.
Oh, yeah.
And that's his mount. Now, he does get others throughout the book.
Yeah.
And other people, depending on whatever franchise that you were in love with, you can get that mount. This also includes ships.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, for me personally, I would love to see, and I don't know if this is going to happen or not, I would love to see, you know, like an Enterprise with, you know, a fleet of X-Wings.
Oh, or, dude,
you know,
yeah.
Something like that. Now, I don't know how that's going to play out because...
Well, that's the thing that, like...
The licensing for all this all over the place.
I think they picked... I think the best person suited to do this movie is the person that's directing it, Steven Spielberg, just because he's worked so many different titles, so many different things, that I think that he can call somebody up and be like, hey
buddy,
yeah. I'm Steven Spielberg. Just let me use an X-Wing fighter for 30 seconds, guys. Come on. I don't know why I made him the Fonzie, but, you know, he's like, hey, forget about it.
Yeah, that should have been Ron Howard.
Right. Hey. Forget about it. You know, just give me the X-Wings for 30 seconds. Maybe the Starship Enterprise. Come on.
Because who's producing the movie? Is it Paramount or is it?
I'm not sure who it is. It might Warner just Brothers? Be DreamWorks because that's Spielberg's company or whatever.
They may have a little bit more clout because because here's the thing, like I said, the licensing for this is going to be all over the place because in the movie from the clips that we've seen, we're not only getting a bunch of retro stuff.
Oh yeah.
But there's like newer video game characters in there, not Fortnite, but what's the can't remember. It's like a shooter. Brain's going blank.
Call of Duty?
Not Call of Duty.
Halo?
There's Gears of War. I'm sure there's Halo.
Yeah.
No, there's like a chick and there's like a whole controversy because her like winning pose was that she was showing her butt and then people got all mad about it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't have any idea. Oh, is that the, what is that? The crap. I think I know it now too and I can't think of it.
It replaced Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Whatever that game was. But she's in it. And so you've got... So I think this is going to be a movie that not just people from our generation is really going to enjoy, but so younger kids are going to like this too because they're going to recognize that chick. Chun-Li or, you know, the Battletoads make an appearance in one of the... scenes. So you've got like all these different video game characters that are coming together. And so the licensing for me is where I'm kind of like, well, are they going to be able to go and talk to Disney and be like, hey, can we
use Mickey Mouse for 30 seconds?
Can we use Mickey Mouse or can we use some Star Wars assets?
Obviously they're going to, because they have the Iron Giant is in one scene or whatever.
I think the Iron Giant's Warner Brothers.
Is it Warner Brothers?
I think so.
I can't remember. I just remember seeing him. I couldn't remember if he was Disney or Warner Brothers.
And the Iron Giant, as far as I remember, doesn't make an appearance in the book. It was a different mech.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about that? Because it's actually kind of cool for us. Yeah. At least for me it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, that's fine with me. I mean, like, I don't know anything about the mech that he gets. You're talking about the pill mech that they get that's like super Ultraman or whatever?
No. What I was talking about was the Spider-Man mech from the 70s Japanese Spider-Man television show.
I guess I don't remember that one.
That one I remember.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, Japan had Spider-Man in the 70s. And instead of following what Spider-Man actually was, you know, Peter Parker, reporter for the Daily Bugle, Spider-Man was a stunt motorcycle rider. And it was very much like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So he would do something, and then he would get this giant Spider-Man mech and fight giant robots. And one of the characters gets that mech.
Okay.
But the thing is, I think that's too obscure for today's audience.
Yeah.
So we've got the Iron Giant in place of that, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Which would make sense.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, like, this is going to be one of those things where you can't really, like, compare the book to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you can just go, I want to see some things from the book show up in the movie, but they've included so much more from more modern stuff than what was referenced in the book that I don't think that you can really try to make a, you know, page to screen comparison for everything. But I would like to see that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Cause that's even kind of obscure for myself. Like, I was like, I don't remember the Spider-Man mech. That's kind of,
this was something, if you just, you got to go onto YouTube and find this Spider-Man. It's cause you're going to sit there and go like, this is way off base.
Yeah.
There's not even related to Spider-Man. This is just a dude in a suit that looks like Spider-Man who's doing, like, karate. But it's really entertaining to watch. You're just like, wow, this is totally the, like, that's one of the things I love, is that it's just like, here's a completely different, and it's wrong, but it's a completely different interpretation of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not even related to Spider-Man. He just has a Spider-Man suit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do want to see, the Enterprise with Babylon 5, with, you know, X-Wings and, you know, TIE Fighters. And I want to see the combination of all the different ships, essentially. Yeah. The other mounts are cool. Yeah, I want to see the 89 Batman car. We already know that's in there. And, you know, you want to see the Ecto-1. You want to see all this stuff. So, yeah, you're going to get that. But it's the ships that I'm more interested in, because we haven't seen any of that. We haven't seen any
of this, the space stuff
yet. Yeah, so. And so I'm really hoping that that's something that they touch on in the movie. They may not. They may not have time.
They may not have time to do it. They might just completely, totally cut that out and just have it to where people transport between worlds using the teleporters.
Yeah, yeah. If you think about it on a budget sense, yeah. Doing a space scene with all these different ships, you got to get licenses for all those ships.
Yeah.
Or we can just teleport you to a planet.
There's a major thing that happens in the movies.
Yeah, while
they're loading a ship, though. So, and then they could always do that. It's just like, well, we're taking the ship to get back to the transporter. So never mind. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there's a way you can work around it if you had to. If you had to make this movie on a severe budget, you could do that. But you'd be missing out on.
But Steven Spielberg, he just hit the jukebox a little bit more, get some more quarters out of it.
Yeah, right. That's just one of those things, though. So if you're on a budget, yeah, you could pull it off where it wouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
But it takes away from the world building.
Oh, yeah.
So the ships, to me, are a big part of the world building, and that's what I would like to see.
I haven't even looked to see what the runtime is on this yet.
I want to say on the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's around 2 hours.
Probably right. I'll just take a gander real quick. 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah, so right at two, you know, just a little over 2 hours.
All right, I'll talk about my number four, because this also ties into the mounts.
All right.
And this is a little spoilery. So some of the IOI team gets the Voltron Lions.
Yeah.
Now, in the book, they never assemble.
No.
I want to see Voltron assemble.
Like, dude,
That's number four on my list. I just really want to see the IOI team with the separate lions being awesome.
Yeah.
Being bad guys with the Voltron Lions, but I want to see them assemble into a giant Voltron mech.
That would be amazing.
And
especially
maybe
on a
go
movie
fight
screen.
The Iron Giant and just have this like
epic battle.
Yeah, then there's like, how do you have there's no way the Iron Giant's going to win against Voltron. Right. But, you know.
Yeah, I'm thinking that they'll take some of those mechs and kind of throw them into like a newer, modern type mechs, because some of those mechs that they list are like, I've never heard of them. Know that they're from older, like,
a lot of them 70s. Are from, yeah, a lot of them are from like, Macross and stuff like that, or Macross.
Yeah.
I'm not an anime guy, so I'm not going to sit there and
yeah, I don't have any
pretend,
idea.
Pretend
yeah.
that I know what I'm talking about, but you have, Transor Z. I think even Transor Z made an appearance in the book.
It did.
Okay.
Yeah. Transor Z, which was, because I don't know anything about Transor Z, and as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, that was in the book, because that's how I know the name.
Transor Z is a Chinese. It was from China.
Yeah.
It was a Japan anime style show. And I only know this because when I lived in upstate New York, there was a small, video rental place that we'd go to before Blockbuster opened up.
Yeah.
And they had a video, like a little collection of the TV series of Transor Z. And
oh,
I
really?
Watched that and I was like, this is awesome. but it's the same, you're looking at the same kind of like, Power Rangers type of thing where it's a giant robot and the head does a thing and the fists shoot off like missiles.
So
and
like
blow
a,
up and,
like the super samurai type things or whatever.
Yeah. But it's all the same. Like, even if you look at the design of Transor Z with, like, geez, the original Megazord. I'm not a huge Power Rangers guy. I was already pretty old when that came out. Or at least getting into my 20s if
yeah,
I wasn't
well,
already.
I was in high school because I remember sitting on the back of the bus and I was telling some kid that he shouldn't watch Mighty Morphin Power Rangers because
it was a kid's show.
Well, no, because it was actually glorifying morphine. He was like, what? And I was like, yeah, the theme song is Mighty Morphine Power Rangers. And he was like, what? Yeah. Anyways.
I used to watch that with my kid brother.
Yeah.
So my that targets more of my brother's age group than it does mine, but I'd watch it with him, so I was at least familiar with like the first two or three seasons. But yeah, if you look at the first Megazord that they had and Transor Z, you're gonna see like, oh wow, those things are pretty close looking.
Oh really?
To each other.
Okay.
But yeah, I want to see the Voltron Lions actually form Voltron.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
There's not much I was disappointed with in the book.
Yeah.
But that was one of them. Yeah. I wanted to see the lions come together and have like a big epic battle.
Actually, yeah.
And I'm gonna get to my last one, man.
All right.
I don't know how we're doing on time, but
we're a little bit over. But that's fine. I'm not too worried about it.
All right.
My butt is starting to fall asleep though. These chairs aren't the greatest.
I'm used to it. I'm in IT.
Right.
I sit professionally. So, the last thing I put on here, and this is something that I really, really want to see. This is a little bit spoilery, but not too much, is I want to see Parzival play... I want to see him actually play Joust.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
To me, that was a huge scene in the book.
Yeah. I want to see the Lich. The Lich King.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I actually remember that mod from D&D back in the day. I don't think we ever played that mod, but I remember seeing that actual mod on the bookshelf all the time whenever I go to Barnes & Noble, but B. Dalton and Walden Books.
That was one of the big, even if you didn't play, I always wanted to play D&D, but I could never get enough nerds together to form a game.
Oh, dude, me and Steven and Michael used to play all the time. And that's how, like, kind of how like 2BT was formed. 2BT was formed way back in the late 80s with us playing, you know, Dungeons and Dragons around, you know, the bedroom floor or whatever, whatnot. And that's kind of how, I mean, 2BT was formed even before that since we were kids, you know, like cousins and stuff like that. But that's kind of like whenever, like we always hung out. We would always like do whatever, but that's kind of like whenever we really started like hanging out.
was whenever we all kind of like got into Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy and whatever, because nobody else in the family was really into fantasy or Dungeons and Dragons and Tolkien and Dragonlance and Forgotten Realms and all like that. And so like when we started like getting into to that, I don't even know how the devil we kind of found out that each one of us played Dungeons and Dragons, because that's not something that you would talk around with our family, because they thought that it was devil worship and stuff.
Yeah, well, back in the 80s there was. I also want to add to that. I also have an autographed R.A. Salvatore.
Oh, really?
Forgotten Realms. Is it Durden
Drizzt? Drizzt Duorn.
Yeah.
Yeah,
however you pronounce his name. Yeah, I've got a line of the Forgotten Realms comics.
Oh, okay.
And I went to the used bookstore. I went over to Recycle Books.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I want to read these. I like R.A. Salvatore. I've got like a bunch of his books. And I'm looking through one of them and I'm like, there's an autograph on the inner cover.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Like, it's like they totally missed it.
Yeah.
So I went and picked that up for like $2 or $3.
You also got a Ralph McQuarrie print too.
I've got two Ralph McQuarrie prints that
are autographed. Were those autographed?
Yeah.
Okay. Are they autographed with just RMQ, or are they like kind of written out the name?
It's Ralph McQuarrie written out.
Okay. Wow. Those are... Okay. If you ever want to sell those, let me know.
No. They were 20 bucks. They were 20 bucks a piece, and I was dating somebody at the time, and I think I bought hers too, so I spent 60 bucks on three different prints.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was over at Recycle Books too.
Yeah, I remember whenever you got those, because I was like,
son of a dude. I was looking up on the wall, and I was like, the first thing I did was run over to the counter. I was like, are those for sale? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
20 bucks a piece. Okay.
Yeah.
Take my money. Here you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
never going to happen.
Yeah. No kidding. Exactly. There's kind of like
that. That was before he died.
That was before he died. Yeah.
Yeah. He
died. If he's got the actual full name written out, then that's an early autograph, because he got real bad with, I think it's Parkinson's. He couldn't really control very much. Like, I've got an autograph, and it's just from like a book, page from a book or a calendar over there. And it's just RMQ, because as he started getting, he couldn't really control as much, so he would just sign RMQ instead of writing out the entire name.
What a horrible way to go. If
you're oh, hell yeah, man.
And as a talented an artist as he was.
Oh, my God. And, like, yeah, and that's one of the things that, like, if you're listening to this and you've never looked at Ralph McQuarrie's stuff, just go do a Google search, Ralph McQuarrie. And
that's what got me reading the Star Wars,
yeah,
the comic series, because it was all based off of his artwork.
Yeah, yeah, his artwork is phenomenal, and it's just beautiful and amazing, and it totally wasn't appreciated enough in his time.
Definitely not.
But if that's going to do it for you on the Ready Player One notes.
I think that's it. Is there anything that you think that we need to add? That was a list of stuff I just want to see from the book.
See, I've just kind of like interjected mine as we went along. I can't think of anything else, man. Like, I do want to see him play and I'm pretty sure that they'll show him play the final video game, because I've tried, I can't remember which one it was. I guess one of the final ones where you got to twist the knob and the creatures crawling up the side, and it was like vector graphics or whatever.
Oh, Tempest.
Yeah. Tempest. Yes.
The thing is, I love Joust.
Yeah.
And what most people don't know is that there was a sequel. There was a Joust 2, which is even better.
Okay.
But, I'm a huge Joust fan. So I just want to see him play Joust.
Yeah.
And there's a little funny bit where he has to switch sides.
Oh, yeah.
He can't play as a player too.
Yeah. Yeah, and, exactly. And that's kind of like the key, I guess, or whatever. One of the keys.
Yeah, that's...
Spoiler, by the way.
Yeah, well, we don't even know if that's going to make it into the movie or not.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, because that's a big part.
I figured, because that's
a really big part. So.
Yeah, for me, that's a really big part.
Yeah.
But in the trailers, you actually see the ostriches.
One thing I'm curious on if they do or don't do...
Is if they virtual reality the game itself?
No, is if they do the thing that comes after, whenever he goes through the first gate and he has to do the movie of War Games.
That's what I'm really interested in.
That's the one that I'm curious. That's the one that I'm most curious about. Like, is if they don't have that in there, because that was like to get the key. Or get the first key to get into the, what was it, jade, I think. It was like jade, glass, and gold or something.
Was it jade or was it copper?
Oh, it was copper. Jade was the second one. Okay. Copper was the first one. So you got to get the copper key, you had to beat the Lich King at Joust.
And then from there, he went to the Copper Gate and went into the Copper Gate. Whenever he went into the Copper Gate, he basically was in the movie of War Games and had to do the lines and everything like that. The reason why I'm so excited, I want to see that, is because whenever they said that in the book, I was like, holy crap, that's such a great idea.
And you get more points for a more accurate intonation and yeah. way that the lines were delivered in the movie.
That is such a great idea for an actual game. You can take VR, the capabilities that they have with VR now. You can take the capabilities of VR and actually throw yourself in the movie to where you can almost have like a 360 view and just have you say in the lines or call for help with the line or whatever. That would be beautiful, amazing, everything I've ever asked for, because that would just be greatness. Actually have you, like, if I could actually just sit in the movie of Star Wars and pick a character to take the place of, say it's like Han Solo, so you pick up from where they meet Han Solo in the cantina from the first time,
give you 10 minutes before.
Yeah, or sit there and watch the movie up until the point to where Han Solo finally comes on, then it gives you your cue like 30 seconds beforehand saying like, be ready. And then all of a sudden, you know, it shows you sitting there as Han Solo from his point of view or whatever. Yeah. And the next thing you know, you're delivering the lines. Or Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader or any character in it. Like, it seems like it would be something that they could do.
Now, didn't they also do Ferris Bueller, or was it just War
Games? It was just War Games.
Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I thought they did a Ferris Bueller one.
Yeah,
too.
So that's one thing that I'm really, really, really excited about seeing. Hopefully that they do that. But I'm also, that's kind of one of those things of like, how are they going to do that? Because that's going to be basically taking images from the movie or taking the movie itself and laying it inside the movie of Ready Player One.
Well, I mean, they've done that before.
Yeah.
And they can digitally recreate these characters.
Oh,
now.
God, yeah.
And well, within the Oasis, and this is the other thing, is that in the previews we've seen is that, if you've read the book, you know when they're in reality and you know when they're in the Oasis. And they try to convey that pretty solidly in the previews.
Yeah.
But they're going to look a little bit – so if they're dead-eyed and they don't actually get the character correct,
yeah,
they can still pass by it because you're in the Oasis. You know you're in the Oasis. Exactly. You can kind of get by with that.
Yeah.
Did you know they're making a War Games television show?
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want to play a game? I don't know. Wait, with the Whopper computer?
Yeah. No, maybe I'm thinking the wrong. What was the other video game based movie?
Oh, man.
Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, because there is a Cloak and Dagger television show, but that's based off of the comic book. No, yeah. I think it's War Games. I think they're making a War Games TV series.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's supposedly like interactive. Like you can get on your computer and sign into a website.
You can play the Whopper computer and tic-tac-toe to let him know that the only true way to win the game is to not play the game.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm David.
I'm Adam.
2BT signing out.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boom.
Nerdy Legion.